And we'll move on to our last argument, which is Martino versus Western and Southern. Mr. Agostino. Okay, Mr. Martino, you can begin.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Peter J. Agostino, and I represent Emilio Martino, who is present in the courtroom as well. This case involves a question of whether or not Mr. Martino was the victim of employment discrimination. Mr. Martino was hired in September of 2006 with Western Southern. At that time, he did not have in possession his original Social Security card. That was not an issue, however, for his employer for about a month. During that time period, another issue took precedence, and that was the issue of what to do with Mr. Martino's role as a pastor of a Baptist church. That issue became the subject of a series of emails between Mr. Martino's local supervisor, Andrew Sobel, and the home office for Western Southern. That came to a head on October 4, 2006, when Mr. Martino put the question to Western Southern whether or not they were terminating his position because he did not give up his position as a Baptist pastor or was not going to give that up. In response to that, he received an email that he was not being terminated, but that he had to bring his position in compliance with guidelines for the Western Southern had with respect to outside sales positions, guidelines that were not made known to himself or to his supervisor, Andrew Sobel. That particular email on October 4, 2006, was copied to Tara Corlett, who works in the home office and who has the responsibility for overseeing outside sales positions for Western Southern. On October 9th, 2006, Tara Corlett then sends a letter to Mr. Martino telling him that he needs to get his I-9 compliance issues in order and that he would be suspended in the interim. And it's our position that this letter came on the heels of Mr. Martino standing up for his rights to be accommodated as a pastor of a Baptist church. And that timing...
This case isn't being litigated as an accommodation claim, though, as I understand it, it's being litigated as a termination claim and a retaliation claim?
Well...
But that you're claiming that the basis for the discrimination is that he was asking for or needed a religious accommodation for his pastor position and was discriminated against or was terminated based on that.
In response to seeking accommodation and taking a stand.
I don't think you can get an accommodation for a job. I don't get that.
Well, the accommodation here at question was whether or not he should continue as a Baptist pastor outside.
I mean, what if the Bishop of Chicago said, I want to spend all my time with this on my religious job. I'm very senior. It doesn't really require my full time. I have a great staff, so I'd like to be an insurance salesman. But you have to accommodate the fact that as bishop, I will not be able to work the same hours that the other insurance salesmen work. Now, that wouldn't fly, would it?
No, but that's not the case that we have.
No, it is the case, because this person has... I mean, obviously, he's entitled to accommodation for religious observances and so on. But if he's a religious official with a job for which he's paid and so on, he can't ask the secular employer to say, look, I have a religious job, and you have to accommodate my job.
He can ask for that,
that
as long
give,
as...
That would give religious officials a kind of privilege that no one else has.
Well, he can ask for that as long as it does not place an undue
hardship.
I
don't think that is... When we talk about accommodating religious beliefs and observances, we're talking about the things that people are required to do to, you know, remain in good standing in their system of beliefs and so on, not to hold a job as a religious official.
Well, I think if we look at Title VII...
Has there ever been a case like that?
I don't know, Your Honor. I don't know it with respect to that, but I do know the jurisprudence is, does that accommodation in all aspects cause some type of undue hardship on the employer?
But here, WNS approved numerous outside positions involving religious organizations, including those for preachers, pastors, and ministers. Their only requirement was not to make $100 or less in 5 hours a week. What? So you could have a job. You could have a job with a religious institution.
Which
5 hours a week and no more than $100. And what? Your client said in his form, his application or his request, that it was $300 and it was 10 hours.
But he was also willing to modify the hours and the income in order to be in compliance with the position requirements, outside position requirements, once they were made known to him.
Right, but then he ran into his I-9 problem.
And this is where the pretext issue...
That's his big problem.
Well, and this is where the pretext issue comes into play, because his I-9 problem is not a problem until he puts his foot down on with respect to his religious position. Then all of a sudden it becomes a problem. And then what causes the explanation that the employer gives for their action to be suspect is that they do not uniformly enforce their I-9 policy. And in fact, we brought evidence forward to the trial court of Michael Bacon, who had perjured himself on his I-9 application, who remained employed with the company for several years out of compliance, and who was dealt in a much more favorable way by the same people that were involved in dealing with Mr. Martino's I-9 situation. Thomas Johnson, who was the director of field resources, was the person who also terminated Mr. Martino. Mr. Johnson first learned of Bacon's noncompliance with I-9 issues as early as May of 2006, met with him a couple times, and extended the time, ultimately allowing Mr. Bacon to resign through August 14 of 2006. And no time was there a threat to terminate Mr. Bacon. In Mr. Martino's case, the I-9 becomes an issue brought to his attention for the first time on October 4, 2006, and he's terminated by October 16, 2006. And the
But Bacon's situation, let's get back to him. His situation was a little different than your client because he had had a history of authorized work with the company. His relationship with Payne and how he misrepresented things, but in the end, he got a 5-day warning. Bottom line, to produce the documentation, and he couldn't, and so he was fired, as I understand it.
But he resigned, Mr. Bacon.
Yeah,
resigned.
He resigned. I'm sorry.
That's different treatment than what Mr. Martino received, which was pretty swift action to terminate his employment. And so to say that I-9 was a legitimate reason for terminating him, I think does not make sense in this case, and this is where a jury should be allowed to decide whether it makes sense, because they didn't apply this policy uniformly. And I think that's what the Coleman-Donahoe case tells us, is that in particular with respect to an issue of some type of misconduct or noncompliance with the rule, that when you look to a comparator, you have more leeway than you would when you were looking to some type of quality or performance. And In this particular case, the I-9 compliance issue was the same whether you were the janitor, a salesman, or the president of the company. The fact that Mr. Bacon was treated much more favorably than Mr. Martino when it comes to this shows pretext.
Well, so you don't think that that favorable treatment may have been the result of the fact that when he was hired in April of 99, he had the temporary work authorization status. He completed the paperwork. He renewed it again in 2000. He didn't renew it, and it wasn't discovered till 06 what had happened. So whereas your client was just hired and could not produce the documentation.
I think the focus needs to be on the same group of decision makers that were involved, Tara Corlett and Thomas Johnson, and the way Thomas Johnson treated Michael Bacon from when he did find out that Mr. Bacon was noncompliant through the point that Mr. Bacon was allowed to resign. That is a different treatment compared to what Mr. Martino experienced. And because of the fact that the timing, the I-9 became an issue only on the heels of his expressing a stance as a Baptist minister, because there's inconsistencies in the testimony of Johnson and Corlett with respect to who knew what and when they became aware of certain things, I think that there is evidence here which should have gone then to a jury to decide who to believe, as opposed to, I think where the judge made the mistake, the trial court made the mistake, is in evaluating the evidence and feeling not persuaded by the evidence. But the question really should be, did we meet the threshold? Did we have some evidence before the judge from which a jury could conclude that Mr. Martino was terminated on the heels of taking a stance as a religious pastor?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Agostino. Mr. Palmer?
May it please the court. This court in Little versus Illinois Department of Revenue stated, the more objectively reasonable a belief is, the more likely it will seem that that belief was honestly held. It's undisputed that we have, that Western Southern had a reasonable belief, a reasonable basis for terminating Mr. Martino's employment. That is, he failed to comply with the I-9 process. Therefore, he faces an uphill battle in trying to prove that that was not the real reason, it was pretextual, and that it was untrue. He primarily relies on two pieces of evidence. Number one, suspicious timing, and number two, Western Southern's treatment of Mr. Bacon. Neither one of those pieces of evidence demonstrate that Western Southern didn't honestly believe that Mr. Martino failed to comply with the I-9 process. First of all, with regard to suspicious timing, Mr. Martino argues that Western Southern essentially ignored his I-9 issue until Mr. Martino took a stand on his pastor position in his October 4th email. That's simply not true, and the record doesn't bear that out. What actually happened was, from day one, Western Southern presented him with his I-9 and followed up with him continuously on trying to obtain an employment eligibility document. In fact, Mr. Martino went to the Elkhart Social Security Administration office on September 19th, well before the October 4th email, trying to obtain a Social Security card, replacement card. He wasn't able to do so, so he went to the Social Security Administration in Elkhart on October 6th, and that was the Friday before Ms. Corlett sent her suspension notice. Ms. Corlett has testified in her affidavit and in her deposition that the reason she sent the October 9th suspension letter was because Mr. Martino had become obvious that he wasn't going to be able to obtain the Social Security card that he said he could. And so the decision was to move forward.
Right, but by then she's been copied on the email exchange about the pastoral position.
That's correct.
And the demand that he resign his pastoral position if he wants to keep his job.
That's correct. So she was copied on that email on October 4th.
And to be clear, the accommodation that he was requesting was not that his hours be reduced or that the policy be changed, but that he be given an opportunity to comply with the policy and continue to maintain his pastoral position in compliance with the policy. Is that not a fair reading of the evidence?
I don't believe that Mr. Martino was actually seeking an accommodation. I mean, he...
Litigated as an accommodation claim. He's focusing on the termination, and then he's also making a retaliation claim. But the basis for the discrimination claim,
yes,
his claim of discriminatory termination, is that he was terminated not because of the I-9 problem. That was a pretext. His claim is that he was terminated because he pressed this issue of his pastoral position, and his employer, your client, had authorized other departures from the outside positions policy, in particular for somebody who wanted to teach music at the University of Indiana,
right,
who was given permission to do so at a rate that exceeded the de facto company policy of $100 and for a number of hours that exceeded the de facto company policy of 5 hours a week. And so if the other guy can do it to teach music at a secular university, why can't he to do it at his church? That's the thrust of the claim.
Yeah, I agree with you that that's the thrust of the claim. Now, in the district court's opinion, Judge Springman found that the IU professor whom you're referring to was an inference of discrimination with regard to how that policy was administered. And then she found that But that issue was an issue for Aaron Miller, and she wasn't involved in Mr. Martino's termination. But beyond that,
Corlett was, and she was copied in on all this.
Ms. Corlett was not involved. It wasn't alleged. There's no evidence that she was involved in
Tim
the
Snyder's
IU professor's situation.
Yeah, that doesn't matter. It's all the company.
Okay, and
I thought Martino. Argument was different. I thought his argument was that he would reduce his hours or reduce his pay as his pastoral income rose.
And maybe I misunderstood Judge Sykes's understanding of it. My understanding of Mr. Martino's claim is that he would have reduced his hours. He wasn't asking for a modification of the policy. And there is no evidence in the record that anyone was given.
He said that he would reduce his hours as his pastoral income rose. Didn't he say that?
That's right, Your Honor.
Yeah. That,
in other words, it wasn't as though he was even... Mr. Martino never said himself that he would reduce his hours or reduce his pay. That was his supervisor who said that in an email exchange with Aaron Miller. But another issue that you raised is Western Southern has not modified its policy for the IU professor.
Right,
so
that wasn't the
as far as they know, his hours were what he said it was, what they were on his form. In other words, they didn't treat him differently than they treated Mr. Martino. Mr. Martino's hours
so
exceeded.
Nobody knew until this litigation that the IU guy was
exactly, and there
in
is no
compliance.
That's exactly right. So there is no link that the evidence that comes in on that point is from.
Okay.
A sales representative in the Mishawaka office. There's no link to the central HR office in Cincinnati. With regard to Mr. Bacon is frankly completely irrelevant to this case for several reasons. Number one, there is no evidence in the record that Mr. Bacon was outside of the protected class. In other words, Mr. Martino has not proffered evidence showing that Mr. Bacon was a similarly situated person outside of his protected class. There's no evidence regarding whether or not he engaged in a request for a religious accommodation. And so under Coleman, in that case, what happened was there were two comparators.
It doesn't affirmatively demonstrate that Bacon did not need a religious accommodation?
No, it does not.
We just don't know one way or the other.
That's exactly right. And the reason
we do know that he never asked for permission to work an outside job?
We don't know that.
We don't even know that.
There was no evidence with regard to that. And the reason is because Mr. Martino was originally going to use Mr. Bacon as a comparator for his national origin claim, which has since gone away. And Mr. Bankett is Canadian, Mr. Martino is Italian. So Mr. Martino, or Mr. Bacon's purpose initially was to be a comparator for the national origin claim. There's no evidence regarding what his religion, whether or not he needed a religious accommodation or not. Secondly, there's no evidence that Mr. Johnson, there's no evidence that Mr. Johnson knew Mr. Martino's, that Mr. Martino was a pastor, that Mr. Martino needed an accommodation for his pastor position. And Mr. Johnson is the person upon whom they rely. They claim that he was involved in Mr. Bacon's situation and he was involved in Mr. Martino's situation. But Mr. Johnson could not have had discriminatory intent if he didn't know about Mr. Martino's pastor position or that he needed some sort of an accommodation. Secondly, Ms. Corlett. She had no substantive involvement in Mr. Bacon's situation. She was copied on one email in Mr. Bacon's situation and knew it was an open issue, but she didn't know whether or not he had ever submitted employment eligibility verification, why he had an open issue for I-9 purposes, or what resulted from that. So she wasn't a decision maker with regard to Mr. Bacon. Therefore, whether or not Mr. Bacon and Mr. Martino were treated differently does not demonstrate any discriminatory animus on her behalf. And then finally, I'd just like to point out that the treatment of Mr. Bacon actually shows that Western Southern consistently enforces its I-9 policy.
Just a little tardy.
A little tardy?
As to Mr. Bacon, I mean, it took a year, right? 2 years, actually? Didn't it take 2 years?
No.
They were Johnny on the spot with Mr. Martino, but...
Well, Mr. Bacon, actually, he was hired in 2001, and when he was initially hired, he provided employment eligibility verification.
And it lapsed, and he was...
But they didn't know it lapsed.
Okay.
So...
But from start to finish, how much notice did the company have that he was out of compliance with I-9 forms?
2 months.
2 months?
2 months. So the issue with...
It was longer than that.
The issue with Mr. Bacon began to become an issue where they were working through the re-verification in May of 2006. And he resigned in April of 2006. Now, you're right. From 2002
until... Wait, say that again. They got knowledge when?
Mr. Johnson got knowledge roughly in the summer of 2006, May of 2006.
That Mr. Bacon had an I-9 problem.
That he had an I-9 issue. And in August of 2006, two months later.
Okay. You said April, that's why.
I'm sorry, I apologize. So Mr. Bacon resigned. Now, between that period of 2001 and 2006, Western Southern had no idea that his employment eligibility had lapsed.
Is it?
Yes, it is, Your Honor. Thank you.
So, Mr. Agostino, I have a minute, I have a couple of minutes, if you have anything further.
The issue with respect to whether Corlett was or was not a decision maker, I think we have addressed to what we believe should have been an application of the cat's paw theory. She was in the inner circle, located in the home office. She was well aware of the effort by Mr. Martino to retain his position as a pastor. And the thing that's important here is she gave conflicting testimony in her affidavit, which was submitted for summary judgment, versus what she said in her deposition, as well as what Mr. Johnson said in his deposition about what she knew and what her involvement was with respect to both Martino's situation and Bacon's situation. And we had in the record before the trial court below the interrogatory answers of the defendant, Western Southern, in which they indicated that Tara Corlett kept Thomas Johnson apprised of developments with respect to the I-9 issues. So we're not dealing here with a suspicious timing that where the interval is a matter of months or years. We're talking about 5 days. 5 days between when Mr. Martino says, I'm not going to give up my position as a pastor, and the boot out the door. And that suspicious timing alone, because of how close it is enough to keep the case moving forward. When you couple it with the fact that there is discrepancies with respect to the reasons for terminating Mr. Martino, the timing, how the company enforces I-9, those factors boil down to meeting the threshold of letting a jury decide, do we believe the company that this is why they really wanted to terminate Mr. Martino, or do we believe Mr. Martino's case that had he not stood up for being a pastor, he would have continued to be an employee of the company?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Agostino. Thank you to both counsel.